Hello and welcome to the podcast, The Lotus Eaters, for the 19th of January, 2022. I'm joined by Harry.
Hello there.
And today we're going to be talking about the 270 doctors against Joe Rogan, the G4 going full 2014 in their feminism.
Very nostalgic.
And also, mass migration is coming. The future is Asian, at least according to the leading expert on migration, who also happens to be Asian. Also, for any Yankees listening, not that kind of Asian, because no, only a certain kind of Asian is acceptable for mass migration. But there's mentioned the first things on the website. So first thing here being, I believe this is a new article, Outsiders from John Tangney here. And there's also an audio track there for Silver and Gold tier members in case you want to listen instead of reading. And so, because that's premium, you got to subscribe for that one. If we go to the next one, we have What If Iran Goes Nuclear by Hugo. This is looking at, I presume, at the, I haven't had time to read these, at the situation with the nukes in Iran, whether or not they're actually going to get them. You know what's funny with the Israeli nuclear program?
What?
They just have it. They just deny that they have it. It's just really obvious. And no one cares.
Please do not look behind the curtain.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of...
massive nuclear warhead sticking out behind it.
Yeah, I mean, I get their arguments and all that, but at the same time, it's just say you do. Otherwise, it just
looks
silly.
You can all see it. It's literally right there. Yeah.
There is actually some good stuff, though. This is completely off-topic from Iran, but the Syrians tried to build a nuclear facility to build nuclear weapons, and the Israelis just blew it up. And then sent them a message being like, hey, we didn't blow up anything, did we? Because if you were making nuclear weapons, that would be illegal, wouldn't it?
It's
like, the brass balls on you.
I respect it.
Anyway, but if you want to look at Iran's nuclear weapons, certainly go and check out Hugo's article. But if we go to the next one, we have the premium hangout that me and Carl did together. So this is hangout number one. So this is just hangout for premium members. So it's like the live stream, except we just kind of relaxingly go through some crap. And the chat there is only for premium members, and we read out a lot of the chat and whatnot. So go and check that out. See if it was any good. And if it is, then we'll do more.
Sounded fun.
Yeah. So that one's on, what is it? Defund the NHS to bring back the British Empire.
Based.
The pricing actually does check out. And if we go to the last one here, we have careers. So this is software engineer / web developer. So we are hiring. Please do go and check out if you are able to fulfill any of those roles. And we'll be able to check the job description and whatnot and make sure you actually can. And if you can, please apply because, well, we need people. So
yes,
go and do that. And you have to work in the office. If you don't want to work in the office, not working here.
No excuses. If you're emailing us from Germany or somewhere like that and you have no way of getting here, then sorry, you're off the table.
Yep. And then the last thing to mention, of course, Getter. So if you want to follow us, also follow us on Getter at lotuseaters_com being the app there. But without further ado, let's get into Joe. I need a new intro.
Joe, no.
No, because I keep saying, like, let's get into it, and then I say, like, a female's name, and I'm like, oh, fuck.
There's just some Freudian tension in the air is all.
But with a male name like Joe Rogan, it's even weirder. So let's not do that. So instead, let's look at the 270 doctors versus Joe Rogan. So this is a story that has popped up, and if we can get this first article up, you can see here The Guardian here reporting on it. Menace to public health. 270 doctors criticize Spotify over Joe Rogan's podcast. Oh, evil man. What did he do?
How dare he have casual conversations with doctors who say the things I don't like.
Dennis the Menace over here.
Also, they've put the quotation marks over menace to public health. They forgot the quotation marks over doctors.
We'll get to that in a minute. So they say in the opening headline here, a total of 270 US doctors, scientists, healthcare professionals, and professors have written an open letter to streaming company Spotify expressing concern about medical misinformation on the Joe Rogan Experience podcast, listed as the platform's most popular program, and also the one they paid the most for, presumably with $100 million or whatever it was. And if we go to the open letter itself, because in here they just selectively take quotes, and that will become apparent as to why in a minute, especially as you mentioned with the doctors.
Yes.
Let's look at the open letter. What do they say? An open letter to Spotify. A call from the global scientific and medical communities to implement a misinformation policy. We just want a policy, bro.
Yeah, we just want them to say exactly what we want them to say.
Yeah.
And also, nothing else.
I don't buy it, and it will become apparent, of course, which is that, oh, we just want some policy. We just want some policy guidelines, just some policy. No, you want him banned. That's what you want. You want the people banned that you don't like.
People have wanted Joe Rogan banned for years, whether it's for platforming alt-writers or anything that he's spoken about, whether it's the trans issue, talking to specific people, and now this is just another in a long line of excuses.
Yeah. But even if you hate the guy, just watch something else. Why do you have to ban everyone you don't like? So, in here they say, by allowing the propagation of false and societally harmful assertions, Spotify is enabling its hosted media to damage public trust in scientific research and sow doubt in the credibility of data-driven guidance offered by medical professionals. I think the medical professionals of the last 2 years have done more damage to that than anyone else could. I mean, if they tried, to be quite frank.
This literally is almost using the language of heresy. He's committed heresy against our strident beliefs.
But even when you take a steel man position, you know, okay, let's just assume everything he ever says is just complete misinformation, and these are angels who have never said any misinformation. It's like, come on, the last 2 years, the amount of shifting sands on what is the science.
Fauci has held every position.
Yeah. They say, we are a coalition of scientists, medical professionals, professors, and science communicators. What the hell is a science communicator?
I think that's literally just a different word for religious interpretator. I must tell you the words from the sacred text. Let me just read them out of this hat for you. Can I see them myself? No, you cannot.
The seer stones aren't allowed to you. Calling on Spotify to take action against the mass misinformation events which continue to occur on its platform. Again, calling on Spotify to take action. What is that action? Ban Joe Rogan. That is what this article is. Throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, Joe Rogan has repeatedly spread misleading and false claims on his podcast, provoking distrust in science and medicine. Specifically, you might be wondering what the hell they're talking about. Well, they do give us a list, and they list off here. He has discouraged vaccination in young people and children. So is the UK government. So we'll ban the UK government too, I presume.
As did some of their advisors, if I remember correctly.
Yes. I mean, pretty much every government at some point has said that there's the drop-off age. I think still, even with the assertion that... What are we going down to? Age 5 in this country? I think they're finally going
I think the testing was between ages 5 and 11, yeah.
But vaccination under what is it, 5 or something, isn't allowed? And also I can see John pointing out that WHO is also saying that don't waste it there. But okay, just everyone's going to get banned. Incorrectly claimed that our... mRNA vaccines are gene therapy. I don't know anything about this. Sorry, I'm just going to leave that there. Just go and watch Joe Rogan if you want to. Promoted off-label use of ivermectin to treat COVID-19, contrary to FDA warnings. Yes, he did. I think we, by gun to the head, we have to leave that there.
We can't make much more of a comment on that.
No. That's how science works. And spread a number of unsubstantiated conspiracy theories. Yes. He's a fun man. He likes to have fun. On his podcast.
He also likes to speak about DMT and monkeys and do impressions of those monkeys. Mm. What an evil, evil man he is.
Not DMT.
Thought I was a monkey on DMT once, man. It's insane.
I can't remember who it was. I think it was Zuby the other day who was saying that everyone he's ever met who hates Joe Rogan and wants him banned, they always come up for dorks. Because anyone who's not a dork can just see that he's a normal guy.
They just come across like people who don't want to have fun.
Yeah, like even if you disagree with him or have a big punch-up with him or something, he would still be a normal human being to you.
Yeah, he's just entertaining to listen to, beyond anything else.
But I think the personality trait of just being, I don't know what a better term for it is, but just a nice guy, a mensch, as like Ben Shapiro would say, probably the best personality trait you can have. But they say in here, Dr. Malone used the Joe Rogan Experience platform to further promote numerous baseless claims, including several falsehoods about COVID-19 vaccines and an unfounded theory that societal leaders have hypnotized the public.
So... do you notice anything about the framing there?
Mm.
They've said Dr. Malone used the Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan didn't ask him specifically to come on to just have an interesting discussion with him. No, Malone snuck his way in there because Joe Rogan's just a simple, unintelligent man who got tricked. This is why he's dangerous. He doesn't know what he's doing.
Sure, but the unfounded theory that societal leaders have hypnotized the public, let's put that in plain English, it is the theory... or at least the thought that the leaders of several countries have convinced the public of things that aren't true. Let's get the next link, please, just to assess whether or not this is the truth. See Paul Joseph Watson posting here. This is, for people listening, it is a car, and the man with the car has put face masks over his air inlets in the car, presumably to stop himself getting COVID.
Because your car will just filter in the COVID, presumably.
I mean, if you don't think quite a lot of people have gone mad, you're not paying attention enough.
I mean, the
very
fact that people are driving around on their own in cars with the face masks on is enough of a sign. This is just one step beyond, though. Good God.
Yeah. If we go to the next one, we've got another example. I mean, we've all seen these, but it's never not funny.
It makes it look like a duck bill or something, like it's Daffy Duck.
For people listening, there are some musicians who have cut holes out of their face masks so they can blow air into their instruments to make noise, and then they've covered up their instruments with, like, cloth.
The cloth does make it seem significantly more phallic than usual, doesn't it?
But also just, like, you think these people are sane? You think these people have not been tricked into believing something that isn't true? No, what they're doing here is entirely... No, it's not. You know it's not. I mean, not to even to get into the whole regime we had in the UK and around the world, in which you need a vaccine passport to do X, but I have a negative test proving I don't have the virus. That's not good enough. You need the vaccine passport.
I did it 5 minutes ago. Nope.
It's like, I don't have the virus, but you're still a risk.
Great.
That is an insane thing to say, and has much of the public and our societal leaders believed in such things? Yes, and they made them policy. So I don't understand how on earth they could write that except just being dishonest, which they probably are. Let's go back to the letter for these people. They say, many of these statements have already been discredited. Then prove those images also discredited, I suppose. I don't know what to say to that. Robert Malone says that much of the public has been taught bollocks. People acting on bollocks as his evidence. And you're like, well, that's been discredited. Yeah. People are doing that.
I've got photographic images of people doing this. No, they've been discredited.
Okay.
Edited images.
Mm-hmm. Notably, Dr. Malone is one of two recent Joe Rogan Experience guests who has compared the pandemic policies to the Holocaust. Ooh, spooky. What hasn't been compared to the bloody Holocaust at this point?
But at the same time, that's, once again, we always have to point this out. They never care, but it's a double standard because you can look back to, like, Gina Carano being kicked off of Disney Plus last year for doing the comparison to how the Germans treated the Jews in Nazi Germany, and then you can go back, and she got kicked off for that by Disney. Then you go back to 2018, Pedro Pascal does the same thing, except with the detainment centres for the immigrants. He gets away with it scot-free, no issue. Once again, everyone does it.
You dared compare a thing to a bad thing. I mean, that's the argument. Therefore, ban Joe Rogan. Big brain, much doctor. Quote, the average age of Joe Rogan listeners is 24 years old, and according to data from Washington State, unvaccinated 12 to 34-year-olds are 12 times more likely to be hospitalized with COVID than those who are fully vaccinated. Not an argument.
Okay.
His audience is young, therefore they're at risk of not being vaccinated. But are they at risk of the virus? There's always been the discussion. The virus goes exponentially up with age. So his listeners being incredibly young, if we're just saying he's complete misinformation, Joe Rogan just wants you to die. Well, it's actually a good thing his audience is young then, isn't it? Because they're not going to die at the same rate as, say, an older audience would be. So,
oh, yeah.
Again, just a non-point in here. As scientists, again, scientists, they swear, we face backlash and resistance from the public as the public grows to distrust our research and expertise. As educators and science communicators, again, don't know what the hell that is, we are tasked with repairing the public's damaged understanding of science and medicine. As physicians, we bear the arduous weight of a pandemic that has stretched our medical systems to their limits and only stands to be exacerbated by the anti-vaccination sentiment woven into this and other episodes of Rogan's podcast. Oh, woe is we, the glorious scientists, who give only good and receive only bad from the ungrateful public and Mr. Rogan.
This immense weight that we bear on our backs for the good of all of you is such an elitist position to be taking. Sorry, you can't believe the evidence of your own eyes because I, the scientist, have evidence to show you you shouldn't believe it.
But I'm an angel. I am literally the prophet.
Yes, I am the prophet of science.
It's a creepy way to word yourself. They finish off here. We, the undersigned doctors, nurses, scientists, and educators, thus call on Spotify to immediately establish a clear public policy to moderate misinformation on its platform. Ban Joe Rogan. Ban Joe Rogan. Why? Because we do all the good. We only good. And Joe Rogan only bad. Why? Because he says things I don't like. Good argument. Very good open letter. Well done, chaps. But that 270 doctors point. Yeah. Let's go to the next link, please. A vet, engineer, and podcast host are among the 270 doctors demanding Spotify take action against Joe Rogan.
Wow.
And it's not just them. A closer look, however, found that the majority of these signatories are either not directly medical providers or are not legally permitted to practice medicine on their own. Nearly 100 of them reportedly hold PhD degrees but do not regularly practice medicine.
I mean, whenever you see anything like this, you've got to take into account the way that people can manipulate words. And the word doctor does not have one specific general meaning, even though we all kind of assume it does. You can be a doctor of music. Will I take medical advice off of you? No, I will not.
I mean, this is why it is absurdist to just point out as, oh, doctors are saying this, as just, the media did.
It's just a term that people apply to sort of mean a superior caste within and society.
I might have some sympathy as a devil's advocate here for the people making the open letter, except that they were completely unclear about what the hell they were talking about. What the fuck is a science communicator? Why would you once use again, that?
It's that's a religious interpreter. That's all it means.
But I presume they mean it's that podcast host, for example. You know, that's not plain English. That's not easy to understand. So if you expect a subpar journo from The Guardian to understand it, you can't put all the blame on the special needs journo from The Guardian. So they say, The Guardian, Forbes, Rolling Stone, Washington Post, and others published the story describing a strong coalition of doctors who asked Spotify to implement a misinformation policy. Only 87 of the signatures are medical doctors or doctors of osteopathic medicine, though the conservative news outlet The Blaze found. So good on The Blaze there for doing the legwork and finding the research. And, well, yeah, the funny thing is, though, because you might say, okay, well, it's not 270, but there's 70, there's 87.
80, yeah.
87 doctors stand up to Joe Rogan. Bad man. Ban him. Yeah, well, they are still doctors.
All right.
Okay, sure. Except that doesn't mean anything. This doesn't work through consensus. That's not how the truth works. And it reminded a lot of people of an old funny story about Einstein. I don't know if you've ever heard this one.
Well, give it a go.
The 100 doctors against Einstein. Sorry, 100 authors against Einstein.
Oh, really?
So this was a document published a long time ago in which Einstein was coming out with his theories of relativity. And a whole bunch of people were like, this is bull. And we can prove it. And so we've all banded together to all sign a letter to say that he's wrong. So the book was not a reaction against Einstein from the physics community. Only one physicist had contributed.
Okay. And he was wrong too.
Yeah. When asked about the book, Einstein retorted by saying, why 100 authors? If I were wrong, then one would have been enough. Yes. And this is what I find strange about these debunks, where it's like, I've debunked you. Why? Because me and all my friends say you're debunked.
Me and all my friends say you is gay.
What say you, Harry, now?
Oh, no.
But that is the argument. It's just me and all my friends think this, therefore you're... No, that's not how arguments work. Because if you could debunk Joe Rogan, let's just assume everything he says is wrong. Everything he says is just complete bollocks. All of his guests are all just talking bollocks. Well, then you could explain why it's bollocks.
Yeah.
In simple English. In a couple of lines. As to why this point is wrong.
Well, they treat truth by as a process of democracy. Therefore, if more people agree with me, I am right. Yes. Whether or not that is empirically true or not.
I'm going to start using that. Maybe we should start publishing articles that are just like 270 people that says you is gay.
You is gay. And it's only you and your girlfriend to speak to disagree.
Who's to believe them? Not me. So they end this off with, because of course this is published in Germany in the 30s, so even though the book contains no outright anti-Semitism, six of the authors were either anti-Semitic or Nazi sympathizers. The rising Nazi movement denounced Einstein, calling his relativity Jewish physics. Because, of course, it did.
Of course.
Yes.
Of course. That's another thing. Never discount the idea that the people telling you that they have the truth have their own agenda.
Mm. But yeah, that's the story. The 270 doctors... I am a doctor, I swear. What do you do? Host a podcast?
I'm a doctor of hair, thank you very much.
Yeah. Could you imagine us claiming we're doctors?
I'm a doctor of the truth.
I'm a doctor of the podcast.
Yes.
Like, it's just such a weird thing to do.
To be fair, if one of us went and got like a journalism PhD or something, then you could claim to be a doctor.
But you'd be such an obvious snake for doing so.
Well, I mean, you'd get headline articles in The Guardian, though, so...
Yeah, fair enough, yeah. So that's the advantage of, well, being a snake, is The Guardian will love you telling. Yeah, that's the story. Joe Rogan, I hope he's all right.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll do fine. One of the good things about it is that from a business perspective, they spent enough money on Joe. They're not going to do anything that's going to tank his numbers. You can't speak to these people anymore. Then what did you pay me all that money for then?
I know, right? Could you imagine being there? Because I know the CEO of Spotify's had fights with his employees about Joe.
Good.
And just getting messages from like these people being like, we need to get rid of him. It's like, I paid good money.
Sorry, Tim, the admin man, knows better how to run your business than you do.
But not even that. It's like Joe, the medical student who's written this open letter, knows better than you do.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, sure. Okay. Well, on to the next segment then. So, it's time to take a trip back through time. Back to the heady days of 2014. Wait, this is from 2020? Oh, God. I didn't realize this sort of stuff was still going on.
It's 2022.
Oh, yes,
it's
2022.
It's the current year.
Yes, it is the current year. I can't believe this is still happening in the current year, to quote John Oliver. Yeah, so G4 is an organisation that I was not particularly aware of or found particularly relevant until last week. We are a little bit slow on the uptake with this one, but I think it's very entertaining to look into, so why not? G4 is a video game television network, well, formerly television network, that shockingly shut down at the end of 2014 and then has sort of resurrected itself in November of 2021, and they've been doing what appears to be like weekly streams, just talking about gaming news, the sorts of like normie sort of stuff that you would expect from gaming outlets. But of course, they have put themselves a bit in the firing line recently after this immense rant went on last week on the 11th of January. So I think it's best that we just go straight to the clip if you want to play this, John.
Sexism in gaming. And joining G4...
They don't quit! The three production assistants
cheering.
Is
that where I thought we were going?
I know,
but I'm here.
I had no
here.
Idea.
I'm listening.
Yeah.
In joining G4, I was ecstatic to be part of something that I grew up watching as a child. But every time G4 is brought up in various channels, even in this YouTube channel, we have the chat in front of us. I can see you. Without a doubt, there will be backlash because I'm not as bangable as the previous host. It's somehow...
Talk to him, Frost!
It has somehow been expected that you can talk about how much you jerked off to women as a compliment.
That's
it's
weird.
Not a compliment.
It's weird.
It's dehumanizing and it's weird. Women do not exist to be nice on the eyes for you. Morgan Webb, Olivia Munn did not exist to be nice on the eyes for you.
Doubt.
Hey, she cooking, y'all.
And that's just obvious sexism. You don't need to explicitly objectify women or declare that you hate women to be sexist. Just go ahead and check out Thorne's latest meltdown on Twitter for some spark notes. Now, here at XPlay, our reviews are written and produced by a team of people. There are too many games for one person to shoulder the burden. So we divide and conquer. And when we use language like we or I, that's the reviewer. That's coming from the mouth and experience of the reviewer reading that review.
Yeah, so belligerent ranting of 2014 caliber right there. They really just don't know when to quit, do they?
Who's in the background?
I assume it's just four or five production assistants clapping. Look at this seal. That guy. Just complete blank, emotionless face. I agree with your points, comrade.
Oh, God.
Yeah, absolutely ridiculous. Intersectional ranting, of course, because she goes into the, you don't need to worry about people actually being sexist or intentionally sexist. It's just an atmosphere of sexism, and she front loads all of that before going into the actual excuse, which is, you know, I may have said some dumb stuff, but it's because someone else wrote it for me. And that's one of the things with this sort of format, you could say, that I don't get, which is, why would anybody reasonably watch this sort of stuff anymore when you can just, like, it's just a bunch of talking heads being handed scripts and saying, read this out, and then making it sound like they're saying it from their own, you know, opinions and whatnot. It's like, well, I could just go to YouTube and type in a review for any video game and get someone's unfiltered, honest opinion, not just spouting someone else's talking points. And also, not get someone ranting at me. Well, as long as I pick the right YouTubers, of course.
I still can't get over the people in the background.
I know.
Their boyfriend's cuck or something. Just like, wow! What was that?
Yeah, I know. But also, notice there's...
Sexism bad.
Notice that these kinds of women can kind of throw out two polar opposite points to insult men for the same thing. With AOC, do you dislike AOC? That's because you want to have sex with her. Do you dislike this woman, Frosk? It's because you don't want to have sex with her. Enough! Incredible logic right there.
But also, women are not here for sex.
Yes. My God. And if you scroll down, you can see the tweet response from the G4's own Twitter account. What a dope take. I love it. Wow, guys.
You know the Obama meme, the Medal of Victory or whatever, and he's putting on himself.
Oh, yeah.
Why don't you like your own tweet while you're at it? Bugger it. Why not?
I know. But yeah, if this is the sort of content they were doing back in 2014, then I can understand why the network shut down. But honestly, that kind of discussion is taking me back a little bit. It's kind of nostalgic to a certain extent when things were a little bit simpler, maybe. Also, I think that's, what's his name? Gerard, the completionist, taking part in this.
Not familiar.
He used to be friends with, like, JonTron and Razorfist. and now he's sat next to this. Good job. Good job. Yeah, she carries on that rant and goes into even more intersectional stuff about blah-de-blah-de-blah. But let's see what kind of effect that this has had on the G4 subs. If you scroll down a bit here, this is the social blade. I think you want to scroll to the left as well, just so we can see the active subs. You can see their views are okay. They were gradually gaining subscribers. Oh, wait, no. Up until the 11th, when that came out, when all of a sudden there's a bit of a dip. It's not immense or anything, but it kind of shows you that there is the audience fighting back against this, going, well, if this is how I'm going to be treated, no.
I would presume people are there for talks about video games, not for lectures from some weirdo about sexism.
Yes, exactly. But you may also wonder to yourself, what brought this rant out? Because it seems in the middle of a video game show, some crazy harpy just starts sniping at you about sexism in the industry. Once again, like it's all the way back 8 years ago or something. You wonder what brought that about. Were there nasty people leaving comments saying that she should kill herself, saying that she wasn't bangable enough, anything like that? No. If we move along, we can see here...
As if it would matter. Like, I could see that they got almost 500,000 subs.
Yes.
Okay. That's a huge audience of a huge range of people across.
You're going to get trolls.
Never mind the views. Never mind, what is that, 10 million or something? Yeah, there are going to be the occasional retard online.
Yeah.
Will say something like, send Bobson for Gene. So even if they're worse.
Oh, yeah, their earnings aren't looking that great, actually. They're in the $8 to $100 range on views per day. But
one day there where they made zero to zero.
Yes, a nice big range they've got there. But yeah, I'd also say, just to make it clear, I don't want to encourage anyone to sort of like dogpile on these people in a mean way like that.
Like, because, it goes without saying.
Yeah, obviously, if you are sending messages to these women saying like...
Bob's and Virgin.
Yeah, Bob and Virgin. That's creepy and that's weird and I don't condone it. But that's not why she went off on that rant. So if we move along, you can see Ryan Kinnell, who's kind of like part of tangential to Geeks and Gamers, appears on Friday Night Tights and stuff, says, she got a bunch of S wrong about PlayStation during a console wars segment, got S on for not knowing what she was talking about, then called everyone who criticized her sexist because she's not as bangable as Morgan Webb or Olivia Munn. Lol.
Old as time. Can't take criticism.
It's a very familiar story, isn't it?
Yeah. And then you messed up, just say, yeah, sorry, I messed up.
Yeah, that's all you need to say. And she made the excuse, you know, like, oh, it was somebody else's script. But once again, that's what I'm making the point of, like, why would you do this format then? You're not even saying your own words. What's the point? What's in it for you other than just being on YouTube?
Also, she was complaining that women aren't just their looks. But if you're not doing any of your research, none of your scripts, what are you doing?
Yeah, what are you doing there? And if we move along again, you can see she actually, if you want to click on this image, John, she actually put up a Reddit post talking about Indiana Black. That's her actual name. I think Frosk is just her Twitter handle or something. Apparently it blew up how I'm spreading misinformation because I've made mistakes when talking about game releases. Sorry for not always getting it right. I work a lot of shows and game news isn't my strength or passion. Playing games and reviewing them is. But if you inherently think women shouldn't be in your hobby, then making these mistakes becomes fixations to justify my ineptitude. What was the need? What was the need for that last sentence? Okay? Like, that first bit, not amazing, you know, okay, why are you even presenting this if this part isn't your strength or passion? But still, fine, whatever, you've owned up to it. But then, it's just because you don't like women playing games, is it?
You're not even playing them. You're reading the news.
Yeah.
You couldn't even do that right. So-
yeah, like, why do you need to go on a 3-minute long rant about sexism when you already know what they're criticizing you for? Oh, wait, it's because you're a crazy feminist. But to be fair, just to make a point of it as well, I went on her Twitter account. If you move along, there are weirdo trolls sending her bad emails by the looks of it. Obviously, these are just screenshots that she's put on. But if this is representative of the sort of stuff that she does get sometimes, then that's not cool. Don't send these sorts of emails to her.
Yes, although I do harassment bad.
Yeah, I do find
that. Put it here first, chokes.
get your ass in the kitchen and make a sandwich. That's kind of what? Funny. that's the one in the bottom right there. But yeah, also obvious troll accounts. They probably only sent these in response to that rant in the first place. But there's also the question of, it's G4. Do you know what business, what company you signed yourself up for? She says there she used to love watching it as a kid.
Then I don't know anything about G4.
I don't either. Oh, wait, actually, before we get to it, you can see here, just to bring back even more nostalgic memories, John, if you move along, Kotaku supported it as well. because Kotaku always got to stick their noses in this. But yes, G4, I wasn't really aware of them before either. Olivia Munn, the woman that she referenced, is actually in films now. She was in like Dark, like some X-Men films, that terrible Predator reboot that was done a few years ago. So she seems to have done quite well off the back of it, probably because she was a good sport. But do you know what the sort of stuff that she was doing in G4 was? Mid-2000s, we can take, you could probably take a reasonable guess.
Oh,
John,
no.
if you want to move along... Yeah, just scroll it back and just play a bit of this clip, John, just for the benefit of everyone.
Coming up over the next hour, you'll see my craziest, most sensational, most irrational moments over the last year, and unfortunately, there's a lot of
them. Helping the women stereotypes
there.
Come
with me as I relive learning to cut hair on live TV on Kevin Peck.
Okay.
The one he uses on national TV every day.
Not too controversial.
Hey, it starts terrible, but ends awesome. Like putting on hot bikinis and jumping off rocky cliffs in Jamaica for the sake of science. And putting on hot superhero costumes and fighting fake crime, also in the name of science.
Yeah. So that's the sort of stuff they did back in the good old days.
The past just looks like a golden era.
It really does. But she doesn't seem to mind being objectified. She doesn't seem to mind the fact that they're putting her in bikinis. She even jokes that she's doing it for the sake of science. She knows she's in on this. She knows why they hired her, because they know their audience, a bunch of sweaty gamer boys who want to see hot women in bikini talk to them about video games.
You know what's funny, though?
What?
The first woman who spoke, she's right. She is hot in her.
Oh, yeah. Well,
because that's the thing as well. She's complaining and being like, oh, you're just upset that she's hotter than me. Well, she is, so...
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be fair, to give her some credit, she's not an unattractive woman, is the original ranter. If she just presented herself in a more traditionally feminine way, she would probably get the same sort of praise that Olivia Munn and others did, not necessarily to the same degree, but yeah, I do agree.
But also that whole segment there, I mean, we didn't get to see the rest of it, and I imagine it was, as she stated, just like all of her F-ups or stupid stuff, right?
Yeah, she was like, oh, my most irrational moments, look at me, I'm a silly woman.
But sort of also taking the criticism of like, yeah, bugger that up, instead of just being like, ah, well, I messed up the news, but sexism did this. They're like, no, yeah. You did this.
No, I'm sorry, sexism is paying your bills, ma'am. Yeah, and there's way more examples here. You can see Geeks and Gamers Jeremy calling them out. Here's the a great picture for those not watching. You can see that it's Olivia Munn again with a gentleman standing behind her, cupping her breasts.
No, it's the Heimlich maneuver.
Oh, yes. Yeah, he was just trying to dislodge her throat with something. Yes. Yeah, Olivia Munn did not exist.
Going, what? Coins up the nose? What is that?
Man, the mid-2000s were a wacky time, I tell you. Ugh. But yeah, saying Olivia Munn didn't exist to be nice on the eyes for it. Yes, she did. Let's not deny it. She absolutely was there so that she could draw in the horny gamer boys. And I don't think there's anything, you know, from a business perspective, particularly wrong with that. But know what industry you're signing up for. There's more examples,
well,
if we move
along.
As long
as it's all consensual.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, this is Grid Girls and all the rest of it, essentially.
Yeah, just click on these images, John. These are the types of women they were hiring in the past. Move along. Yeah. Pretty traditional. And there's Olivia Munn again. She definitely wasn't just eye candy, I swear. But yeah, so you know the kind of business, you know the industry, you know the company you're signing
up for.
It's
a gaming grid girl right there.
I know. And then
if
we move along, there are other people pointing out it wasn't just the objectification that was going on. Was G4 ever good? Is contrarian garbage? You're an effing fraud and you know it. G4 ran this skit on television and you're trying to discredit them. So if you just play this skit, we'll just play the full thing for full context, because it's pretty normal and then it just takes a turn, shall we say.
Horrible, Edith. Just horrible.
What is it, Harry?
Oh, our healthcare costs have gone up. Kingdom Hearts 2 has screwed us again. High property taxes, overpriced prescription medications. Where was Kingdom Hearts 2 during Hurricane Katrina, eh? Oh, I wish there was something we could do about it.
Harry, there is.
Really?
For the cost of sending an email, we can vote for Shin Megami Tensei Nocturne.
But that's so much.
Oh, but it's worth it. Shin Megami Tensei Nocturne would never take advantage of our innate gullibility.
Ooh, that's good news. Thank you, Shin Megami Tensei Nocturne. Now get me my supper, woman. Don't make me use the belt.
That just comes so out of nowhere, doesn't it? Don't make me use the belt. Oh, video games, video games, video games. Spousal abuse. I mean, where does that come from? I know. This is the company that you signed up for, Frosk, if that is your real name. What were you expecting? Things were more fun.
I kind of enjoy the comedy aspect because it's obviously ridiculous. It's obviously making fun that you shouldn't beat your wife because it's like, yeah, imagine
controversial statement.
Yeah, because the joke is, imagine how silly that would be.
Yeah, if he was just, talking about video games, pleasant conversation. Don't make me beat you with the belt, woman. Yeah, so that's the sort of atmosphere and company that you're part of, and now you're just taking us all the way back to 2014, which honestly were probably better times in comparison. It was all still new then. We all had sparkles left in our eyes. I could still smile without creaking. Anyway.
Right your mouth.
It's just so unnatural to me now, that's all. Anyway, let's move on to a little bit of more gaming news, because that's basically to do everything to do with that. There's just a bit more relevant stuff as well with gaming news, such as Microsoft. I think you've pointed this out and talked about it in the office as well. Microsoft has been buying Activision and Blizzard and made an agreement to do so for $68.7 billion.
A friend of mine called me yesterday and told me, because I told him the news, because he used to work in the gaming industry, so he like knows all the different companies and has an interest in where they're all at, and he just immediately said to me, like, all the games are going to go woke. I was like, what? And he said that apparently Microsoft instituted a new thing where, you know how you're writing in a Microsoft document, right? If you misspell it, it's got a little red line, and if it's grammar, it's like a little green line.
No,
apparently there's now a little purple line they want to introduce for like outdated language. So politically incorrect language.
Oh no. So for instance, if I wanted to do a Call of Duty game that was historically accurate, set in the early 1940s during World War II,
mid-century Germans.
Yeah, exactly. Mid-century Germans. Let's get those Eastern Asian people.
Yeah, but there's also the, you know how there are people who are kind of autistic about that as well? It's like, oh, you spelt this wrong, or oh, the grammar's a bit wrong. Yeah. Now you're going to end up with like loads of kids in the future like, oh, well, that's the wrong kind of language.
Yeah, you're just giving carte blanche to bullies. Mm. Let's be honest here. And this is also to make a point as well. After Microsoft back in 2020 bought ZeniMax, who are the parent company of Bethesda. So it seems that Microsoft is making big bids to just entirely absorb the majority of the gaming industry. Anything that isn't already owned by like Sony or Microsoft will end up getting bought up by Microsoft before anyone gets the chance. But let's take a look. Microsoft has confirmed the purchase of Call of Duty publisher Activision Blizzard. Also a question, do they really want to do that after all of the stuff came out about Activision Blizzard last year? I guess it doesn't really matter. All of the virtue signaling towards progressive causes doesn't seem to matter when there's big bucks involved.
Or maybe they think the case is complete bollocks as well.
Yes.
That's not been finalized yet.
Well, so there were definitely elements to it that were bollocks, and then elements to it that maybe had a bit more weight to them.
Do you remember it? The funniest one was when the people who were complaining, they had like serious thing, and then, by the way, I only have one plug socket that I have to buy extension cords for. The injustice. It was like, lady.
I'm a woman being persecuted.
It's like, I've been sexually assaulted, but also I had to buy an extension cord.
These two things are the same.
It was strange, to say the least.
Yeah, so the deal, which won't be finalized until 2023, is said to be worth a staggering $70 billion. It encompasses Activision Blizzard and Candy Crush publisher King, as well as individual studios owned by Activision. With Microsoft owning the Xbox brand, the ramifications for the gaming industry are huge. It could spell the end for games like Overwatch, Call of Duty, and Diablo appearing on PlayStation consoles. So those aren't really the sorts of games that I typically play, but I know that those are huge franchises, so could spell bad news for Sony in the future, whether or not they still have their own roster. Although, from what I'm aware, the PlayStation 5 and consoles like that, they've barely been releasing any new worthwhile games on them anyway. It's like, why even upgrade at this point, especially when they're in such a shortage? Anyway, according to Microsoft, Activision, Blizzard, and Microsoft will operate independently until the deal is finalized. After the deal is completed, Microsoft will begin to add more and more Activision titles to Game Pass. It will also accelerate Microsoft's plans for cloud gaming. Upon close, we will offer as many Activision Blizzard games as we can within Xbox Game Pass and PC Game Pass, both new titles and games from Activision's Blizzard's incredible catalog. The fantastic franchises across them will also accelerate our plans for cloud gaming, allowing more people in more places around the world to participate in the Xbox community using phones, tablets, laptops, and other devices you already own. Activision Blizzard are enjoyed on a variety of platforms, and we plan to continue to support those communities moving forward. Unless you're on a Sony product, presumably.
In which case, go F yourself.
Yes. The Activision takeover far eclipses the $7.5 billion deal Microsoft made with Elder Scrolls developer Bethesda. The previous acquisition saw Microsoft gain franchises such as Elder Scrolls, Wolfenstein, and Starfield. While Bethesda games have remained on Sony devices for now, Microsoft has hinted that future releases will be exclusive to Xbox. So it looks like they are just absolutely monopolizing the industry, or at least making a big bid in an attempt to.
I'm hoping this actually just hurts them in the long run, because it's part of the reason I stopped buying consoles, because I really love sitting down with a controller and playing. It's much better than working on a PC, frankly. Yeah. I just find it more
I'm ashamed to say, as I always am, I don't own a gaming PC. I really need to. I've just got PS4.
But I remember having to have, because I had a PS3 and an Xbox, and I had to switch between them. You could only get games on certain ones. It just pissed me off so much that I was just like, alright, now to hell with this in future. Like, I just want a computer. And then I don't have to worry about any of that nonsense.
It makes sense. I mean, I'm just uncomfortable with any monopolies emerging, to be honest, and taking a huge share of the market.
But the more and more like major games become, you know, this machine exclusive, I wonder if more and more people will find, okay, fine, I'll get a PC then, because it does both.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's one of the reasons that I would say basically just play on PC. But it's also worrying because these kinds of companies, we've seen them before, they will...
PC Master Race is the
exactly. They will buy up smaller studios, force them to make something that they're not comfortable with making, and then when it underperforms, they'll just shut the studios down. And this just seems to be another example of potentially that happening in the future. Not that I think they're going to shut down Activision Blizzard, but perhaps the smaller studios that they already own. They're just going to be like, well, you're not hitting our bottom lines, so... off with you. You're
microtransactions done. Or GTFO.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be every game is going to have to be what Microsoft wants it to be, whether that's actually fun or artistic or interesting or creative in any way. And if we move along, it's already started to affect things. So the Xbox Activision deal costs Sony $20 billion in share price value already. So this says Sony's share price has dropped by 13% in the wake of Microsoft's intended purchase of Activision Blizzard, the lowest since 2008. Even if you don't care about any of Blizzard's games, Microsoft's planned acquisition is going to have major effects on the game industry, assuming the deal goes through and that the American Department of Justice is supposedly worried about it, creating a monopoly. It will instantly make Microsoft the third largest games company in the world, overtaking Nintendo and sitting just behind Sony and Chinese giant Tencent. That's not the worst news so far for Sony, though, whose share price has dropped by 13% since the announcement, wiping out $20 billion of their market value. Share prices can be highly volatile in the aftermath of big news, so it's perfectly feasible the price could recover quickly, but it makes it clear that investors in the wider world think this is nothing but trouble for Sony. And yeah, whether they do go back up or not, it's going to be trouble in the long run, as Sony's going to be given less and less access to major titles. I mean, they've already probably lost access to whatever the next Elder Scrolls is going to be, and the next Wolfenstein and all those big franchises. Now what are they now they're going to lose access to Call of Duty. It's not looking good. By comparison, many third-party publishers saw their stock price go up, with the likes of Capcom, Square Enix, and Ubisoft all seeing sharp rises, on the assumption that their big-name titles will also be of interest to Microsoft. Please, Microsoft, don't buy companies like Capcom or Square Enix. Capcom actually makes fun games. Keep your filthy hands off of them, to be perfectly honest. But yeah, I guess we'll see how this affects the gaming industry moving forward. And G4... just not much else I can say that we haven't already said, so let's move on.
Okay, let's go to a spicy topic. This is going to be spicy, so...
it's going to be fun.
Mass migration is coming, and the future is Asian. This is according to a migration expert and master in his field, Dr. Parag Khanna. And
that just sounds like a threat, doesn't it?
It does. I don't know how much we can say on this topic without being shot in the head by YouTube, so we might have to tread carefully on this one, but I'm going to read what he wrote. So, this is an article in the Herald Scotland, and it is mostly centred on Scotland in its framing, because, you know, it's a Scottish paper, but the actual argument applies not only to Scotland, but to every country on Earth.
I'm sorry, just before we actually go any further into the article, that top paragraph there, scroll down, just that top paragraph, Scotland, with its liberalism... Scotland's liberalism.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about Scottish liberalism, especially while the SNP is still in charge.
Yeah. There's a mistake I've noticed already, is all.
Yeah, but they say in here, the future for Scotland, like the rest of the Western world, I should clarify, not every country on Earth, I forgot to mention that, it's only the West that's getting this mass migration. Funny that. Is probably going to be Asian. The country will find itself swept up in the coming Great Migration. We will see a brownification of Scotland as demographics and mass migration coalesce to change the complexion of the West. Dr. Parakana, the world's leading intellectual on migration, presents a stunning analysis of the future. To pro-immigration side of the political debate, such as Nicola Sturgeon's SNP, Kana's claims will be well received. Others, in the populist anti-migrant camp, will be infuriated. Even fearful, Kana's comments will play directly into Scotland's increasingly fraught culture wars.
Just throw populist in there to scare the normies.
Yeah, populist, scary. Yeah. And also, he's gonna increase the culture wars. How's he going to do that? Well, so, I mean, we were joking about this before, but me and John were just like, well, I mean, you've got, like, let's say the alt-right, all the guys with the tiki torches being like, you will not replace us, and then Kana on the other side being like, we will replace you.
Yeah.
This isn't managing a conversation. This is just, like, making it worse, but okay.
And at the same time, denying that they ever said, you think we'll replace you? We won't replace you, but we will replace you.
Right. Like, you both want a race war.
That's just a racist conspiracy theory.
Okay. Kana, who has just brought out the celebrated new book, Move, How Mass Migration Will Reshape the World and What It Means for You, is an expert in political science, international relations, economics, geopolitics, globalization, blah, 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 blah. He's got a million words after his name. That's why I'm just going to cut all that out, because it goes on forever. Kana has also advised the US National Intelligence Council and has traveled to 150 countries researching global future trends. So what does he have to say about the future? What's it going to look like? We have always been on the move, says Kana. Migration is a central part of humanity's long story. Since Western colonization began, migration sped up. All right, going to stop you there for a minute. I just refer you to Douglas Murray's endless speeches on this topic. Mm-hmm. People are like, oh, you know, Britain is a country of immigrants. People have always immigrated here. Like the Huguenots. And it's like, yes, a few thousand people in 1 year, in between years and years of nothing happening.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just keeping it to ourselves, really.
Mass migration. I mean, the other mass migrations are the literal invasion by the Normans or by the Danes.
So. Yes.
I think that's what we'll call it.
An invasion, that's... I probably shouldn't say any more.
Well, no, he's advocating it. So,
yeah, that's quote, true.
In every culture since, Kana explains, the number of migrants has increased because the number of drivers of migration have increased. In the past, some Europeans wanted to get rich in new colonies. Others fled disasters like the Irish famine. War played its part, as did the opening of America, Canada, and Australia. When it comes to the progress of migration through the centuries, says Kana, the decimal place always moves to the right. We went from millions of migrants to tens of millions of migrants in the 18th century. By the 19th and 20th century, we've got hundreds of millions of migrants. Could just enforce the borders. That would have always solved these problems. But no.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. Today,
just because people want to move doesn't mean they should or have the right to.
His argument is that, well, numbers go up over time, therefore it's inevitable numbers can go up.
Look at this graph.
Yes, the numbers will just go up forever. Right. They don't have to. You could just enforce the border.
This is just the migration equivalent of Malthusian economics. Number keep going up, never stop.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very sad, very sad.
go
watch J-Rex and Prim video if you haven't, it's great. Today, climate change has been added to the forces compelling migration. Throughout this century, swaths of the planet will become uninhabitable, it is predicted, displacing entire populations. Otherwise, it just seems to be a theory that is pulled out of people's ass. I'm very at a loss to find where these people make this argument other than, well, the sea levels will rise and then everyone will have to leave London. And it's like, well, we're going to wake up tomorrow and the whole thing's going to be underwater, is it?
Yeah.
No.
You'll open your window and a load of water and a mermaid will flood in.
Yeah, it's not that people will move slowly over time and then, well, their problem's fixed because we move back. No, okay, the whole world will just be underwater. It's strange, I find. In this century, says Kana, in just 20 years, climate change has already accounted for 30 to 40% of total displacement in the world. Again,
is that true?
There's no source.
I don't think that's true.
Where's your source? Anyway, so the drivers of migration are now threefold. You've got one third economic, one third political, wars and persecution, and one third climate change. I don't believe it. I mean, just on the people we get alone into Europe, bugger off, are they moving because of climate change? They're endlessly here because they're just like, well, I heard it was rich.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what a job.
Yep. Gibbs job. Look at the Syrian drought, which led to the urbanization, political unrest, civil war, and exodus of nearly one quarter of the population as refugees, he says. Doesn't follow at all. There was a drought, therefore Syrian civil war. I mean, if that's not reductionist, I don't know what it is.
I was going to say, are they just purely putting the Syrian civil war on a drought?
No rain, let's kill each other. We could just, you know, clean the water or import water. No, let's just kill each other. All right, all right. Simple as. In this century, says Connor, we're talking about billions of people moving. That's what I'm trying to explain. Literally billions. Again, this is the line theory. So yeah. In the future, we'll just have billions of roaming hordes of humans just moving over the continents.
Gangs of communes moving from one place to the next.
And if that scares you, it shouldn't, because that's the future, and that's progress.
And why that's a good thing.
That's a beautiful vision of the future, as Connor will try and lay out. I don't know why. The people of Asia will dominate the coming Great Migration. Asia has more than 50% of the human population, says Connor. However, this is where it gets funny. Asian birth rates are still high, and Western birth rates are practically zero, he says. Therefore, by law of simple arithmetic, even more of the world's population will be Asian. The future is truly Asian.
That's literally Malthusian economics. Western birth rate zero, Asian birth rate high. It will never change. Nothing will ever happen to ever change that.
Nor could we ever do anything to change it.
So we just need to accept it. We just need to import them over here. Don't worry, guys. We've got plenty of space.
Could you imagine going into government acting like that? And just being like, whatever the trends are, we're going to do nothing. That's my role as the leader of the country, to do literally like whatever's going on, no matter how bad, no matter how corrupt, just leave it. No, don't even repeal every legislation. Just keep the bad things going.
See, obviously in many circumstances that sounds terrible, but I can think of many circumstances where a government just going, we won't do anything, would be the absolute best solution.
Well, if the whole situation's buggered and they just say we'll do nothing. Like, let's say all of France wants to move to the UK and the government goes,
Well, at that point, yeah, maybe the government should step in.
Because that's what he's arguing. If the populations of India, Bangladesh, and Pakistan are combined, they exceed China's population. Khanna believes it is the young people from the subcontinent who will make up the mass of future migrants. Much of the subcontinent faces more climate danger than China, which higher proportion of livable areas. So he's saying here that, okay, he's saying Asians, but not those Asians.
Oh, okay.
Not the Asian Asians. They're not going to come. Right. Chinese youth is less likely to want to leave home, Khanna believes. China is stable and strong. Whilst the young Chinese people might like studying in the West, not everyone wants to be a political revolutionary and live under a liberal, democratic, free society. So there we are. That's what we're left with. It's funny.
Chinese don't want to be free.
It's funny how he listed this with the future will be Asian, and you've got this idea in your head, and then he's like, no. Only Pakistan and Bangladesh.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah, had to be Pakistan, didn't it? The country which is totally worth importing more migrants from.
It's worked brilliantly so far.
No problems whatsoever. Let's have billions of them. That's the argument. Right.
There's not even billions yet. Let's just make more of them and then import them.
Pointless nation full of fundamentalists. And then the next title here in the article, Migration or Die.
Where does that come from?
Oh, it's good to know we're being threatened at least.
I was going to say, that's where the gun just gets pulled out.
Shh, take the Pakistanis or you get the bullet. Okay, Khanna, please leave my room. Europe should view mass migration not just as a benefit, but a lifeline. Ah, yes, the lifeline of more fundamentalists from Pakistan. What a godsend.
We can't just encourage our own people to have more children.
No, praise be to Allah. We have been sent with billions of Pakistanis.
Great. We can become little Pakistan.
That's literally his argument. Khanna believes the West's entire discussion about migration is cockeyed, he feels. We have low birth rates, aging populations, not enough workers, especially to care for our growing elderly populations, and plenty of space. Do we? You mean Britain? Europe should be competing in a cutthroat manner to recruit as many smart Asians as possible, but none of the Chinese because they're not coming. Only Pakistanis. Is this... Who? That's my first question. Which one of them doesn't have a relationship with the Taliban? Instead, Europe has seen the rise of anti-immigrant nationalist and populist politics. You cannot simultaneously hold that labour shortage are becoming more acute, and also that populism remains as an inanimate force, because the truth is that the more painful truth is that demographic and therefore fiscal circumstances will become... The labour shortages are becoming more acute, and also holds that populism remains as an immutable force, because the truth is that the more painful the demographic and more fiscal circumstances become, the more likely it is that populism will have to bend to economic realities. This is a weird argument. Yeah. I hear this a lot. So the argument goes, there's not enough people in the country to do the menial jobs. Who will clean my toilet, Donald Trump? If you remember that.
Yes.
And therefore...
that just has so many implicit, like...
Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah, that's just like, only Asian people will clean my toilet.
Well, it was a lady talking about Mexicans on The View, if people don't know that clip. Some Hillary Clinton supporter was like, well, who would clean my toilet, Donald Trump?
I am very progressive. Yes.
I too am a leftist. And so the argument goes that there won't be enough poor immigrants that we're just going to endlessly import, apparently in the billions, to, say, the UK, to do the menial jobs. Well, and therefore this is bad because you won't be able to employ really cheap labour. This doesn't sound bad to me, and it's always bugged me.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not an economist. I don't have an economics degree, but I find it weird when people talk about the uncompetitive labour force because wages are too high.
Well, I'm no Marxist, but I would say that from a economic point of view, if for the benefit of businesses keeping wages low, you decide to import a load of people from already poor countries so they can work for nothing, you know, you could make an argument that that sounds like exploitation.
Sure, sure. But think about that complaint for a second. Wages are too high. That's a complaint.
Okay.
The complaint is that the labor force is not competitive enough because the wages are too high.
Have you seen what those delivery drivers are getting paid nowadays? Far too much.
Whose interests is that individual talking of? Is he talking of the interests of the people who've got those high wages? No. He wants them cut. He wants them lower.
Yeah, and if you're worried about the fact about the idea that, oh, there's not going to be enough people to fill those positions, that's rubbish.
But his rubbish. Part of his argument here, as laid out, is just him saying, yeah, you in the West, you get paid too much. I'm glad you're on my side.
You need to be as poor as we are.
Quote, we tend to default towards this view that national identity and anti-immigration postures are that persistent norm, and everything will have to hold and wait until a great enlightenment transpires. This is like the racist will suddenly disappear one day.
It's a brown future. Beige future, I think it
obsession.
Is.
Well, they do use brown in here, actually. That is not the case at all. If that were true, Germany wouldn't be a mass migration country that it is today. And no, Germany is the way it is because of Mama Merkel. Everyone knows that.
Yeah.
And he also just gives us the numbers. Around 1 million migrants arrive in Germany each year, and 13.7 million people are first-generation immigrants. 1% of the population each year in Germany. Remember, in 2016, I think it was like 2% because of the everyone-can-come policy. Just 1% of the whole population is just foreign that year alone, and first-generation immigrants being 16%. 16% of Germany is foreign-born. What happens when it reaches 20, 25, 30, 33?
At what point do we stop calling it Germany?
Questions. When does it become the Heathrow waiting lounge? Recent elections saw Germany swing to the left with an SPD Green Liberal coalition and the collapse of the hard-right anti-migrant AfD. That proves, says Karner, that populism is more bark than bite. Right. Okay, yeah, the Germans are not recognizing their own problems, probably because they still got, like, German guilt, which we don't, because we defeated the Germans, unlike the Syrians who sided with them. Unless Western nations want to decline inexorably, immigration policy needs to be directed by supply and demand, not insular notions of identity. Immigration policy needs to be purely about economics, not about the people who live here, or any of their concerns, or their existence as an identity, in any form.
Once again, if you want to talk about supply and demand in terms of labour and other such things, once again, we have a decent enough population who aren't working as it is that you could just go, oh, well, if the wages go up to incentivize people to take these jobs, those people might actually be tempted to get off the dole and do something productive.
But it's just the more point for me is he's saying the identity aspects, the concerns about identity and immigration are not important. So if we could import 80 million people to Germany tomorrow, to the point that the German identity ceased to exist, it became a figment of the past, like, I don't know, the Vandals or something, an ethnic group that no longer exists, that wouldn't be bad. That wouldn't be undesirable. That would, in fact, be as neutral as just, well, numbers go up, well, more good. Insane. Karner also notes that the current manifestation of populism may quite literally be short-lived. The mostly elderly, xenophobic, populist generation is heading for the big Brexit in the sky, he says. Meanwhile, anti-migrant policies are damaging Western country, he maintains. Again, a man clearly of our interest. How does he think of us? You will all die soon, and along with you, your worthless identity. This is not someone who has any interest in the people at all. He just sees what numbers go up, world more good. Be Canada. I'd rather not.
No. Absolutely not.
That's the next
no.
headline. And over here, I'm going to skip over it, because it's mostly him just saying that Canada is very cucked and therefore good. And no. But he then just go on to actually admit some of the realities of what he's proposing. Immigrants also... So he starts with, immigrants also pay more into the system than they take out.
No, they do not.
They fulfill social and economic services that Indigenous people don't want to do, like collecting trash. Much more time, money, and energy should be spent on integration, though, so that social balkanization doesn't lead to racial friction.
He's finally addressing some of the actual issues.
Yeah, it's not racial either, you moron. You can get plenty of white people who are from one culture and move them into another country of white people, and there's going to be friction. Why? Not because of racial friction, because of ethnic friction.
I don't want 50 million French just moving in overnight.
No. Connor points to France for failing miserably on this issue. Yeah. Quote, I don't think France will ever get its S together, he says bluntly.
Oh, based.
Significantly, Islamophobia and hostility towards migrants currently dominates French politics.
Never mind.
Islamophobia currently dominates French politics. How could the French do this?
They have no reason whatsoever to feel such a way.
I can't believe France would do this. It's the French people's fault. How could they? Carner sees Germany as the European country leading the way when it comes to creating social unity between the races. Again, I don't know why he never speaks in ethnic terms. He only speaks in racial terms, which is a weird thing to do. But Britain, despite all our fears over Brexit, isn't doing too badly either when it comes to cohesion and migration. Quote, look at the number of wealthy South Asian peers in the Lords. There's no equivalent to France.
Oh, that... When did this article come out?
I think it was a couple of days ago.
Did they not see the recent news on a particular Asian lord?
Well, just no one tell them about Lord Ahmed, all right?
Oh, yeah.
Then we move on. So he then lists it, brownification. Okay, this is going to get spicy, isn't it? If you literally want to be the mirror image of the neo-Nazi, go for it, but it's a weird desire. Migration means that the raciality of the world is already mongrelizing, he says. These are his words, not mine. And as the century moves forward, we'll only see more of this robust mongrelization of the world, genetic mingling that's inevitable as a result of different populations mixing in all corners of the planet. In London, Mohammed is already the most popular boy's name, Khan adds.
Not due to, like, an integration. What is he on about?
We'll see the effects of mass migration play out over the next 30 to 50 years. We've already run this experiment in the UK.
Yeah.
And again, it's not to do
this
with...
Everything that he's saying here is so wrong. Even if you... Like, the joke
it's
that
so
I was...
It's so low resolution.
The joke that I was... I mean, even on a, like, microcosm, if you examine it, there's the joke that I made about the... Oh, it's a beige future, the idea that all the races will just end up mixing together. That's not how it works. You have two people who have a mixed race child. They go on to partner up with somebody else. If it's anything other than another mixed race person, their child will have one dominant ethnicity.
Sure, but also just the weird low resolution of endlessly focusing on race. Because the important thing of the experiments of mass migration that we have had in the last century, let's say, in Europe, is not one of race, but of culture. These cultural problems have played out across European communities intermixing and non-European communities intermixing. Sure, there is racial stuff to talk about, don't get me wrong, but it is not the primary thing of where the friction is coming from or all the rest of it. It is the weird stuff that foreigners do that is sometimes illegal.
Yeah, it's cultural.
The West will undergo brownification, Connor believes. If Asian youth represent the majority of the world youth and the majority of world migrants, they also represent the majority of future mummies and daddies. We'll see an ever higher proportion of the world's children with brown complexions and less with white complexions. You can't refute that or do anything about it. It's all part of a beautiful, deep tide of history and demographics. And this is where he just releases himself as being the mirror image of the Tiki Torchy guys.
Yeah, he sounds like a conqueror gloating.
Hmm. He is not saying that, it is what it is. It's not a neutral opinion on the situation. As he says, beautiful. He sees it as beautiful that white people will become, let's say, a massive minority. And as he puts it, the brownification will take place. He thinks that is not neutral.
Well,
he
white people
even have
were evil, don't you know?
No, it is beautiful to him. And he wants the Scottish, presumably, to become like American Indians. like living on some kind of like
reservation
out in the sticks. You can find them out there. They don't live in any of the cities.
We stuck them all on the peaks of the highlands.
No, they're just in the countryside. They're not in any of their capital cities or major cities.
Mm.
When could that ever happen? And then I thought we'd just point out that the fact that this is obviously just anti-white rhetoric there, the fact that he is obsessed with such a thing and calls it beautiful. And it reminded me of a clip that Bo mentioned earlier in the office, and I thought I'd play it because it's just an amazing thing to see. This is Jimmy Kimmel talking about the U.S. Census.
Some more news. The results of the 2020 census just came out, and for the first time in American history, the number of white people went down.
Says with a smile on his face.
Wait, what?
That's your audience. You say white people went out and they start screeching and hollering about it as if it's good.
That's the subversion.
It's a celebration for them.
I can only hope that was created by like one of those applause signs just lighting up, but I doubt it.
To be honest, I reckon they did it spontaneously, but also just imagine the reverse. The 2030 census, for the first time ever, the black population in the United States halved.
What?
Could you imagine that happening on daytime TV?
Absolutely not.
No. And I thought I'd also mention, because a lot of this argument plays into economics. At one point he says, Russia, the world's biggest wheat exporter, needs farmers. And Bangladesh, people face rising sea levels, so why not put them together to solve the two digital problems at once? However, clearly, an anti-migrant Kremlin would never accept such an idea. And this being the argument, we'll just move everyone from Bangladesh to Russia and that'll make money. Well, we have an example of this in Britain. Like, let's just get this graph up, which is, I don't know everything about economics or anything, as I've said, but the argument that lots and lots of migrants are some kind of magic bullet to make your economy amazing. It's just not.
No. I mean,
this is GDP per capita for the UK, and since 2008, it's down. Because, well, we've had the migration. It has not turned the economy into some, like, superstar.
I mean, once again, to address the economic argument, this is something that Douglas Murray addresses in The Strange Death of Europe in the very first chapter, talking about the counter-argument of, immigrants put... put more into the system than they take out. No, that's just a lie. It's based on misleading studies that look at maybe the top 1% of migrants who are the most productive, and then ignores all of the ones who just take out of the system.
Yeah. I thought I'd also just end this off, because I said there's not much we can say about this without being shot in the head by YouTube, so I thought I'd just end this spicy segment off with something even more spicy.
Oh, God.
This is an op-ed in Russia Today. Multiracial Britain now resembles Neapolitan ice cream, with brown at the top and gammon pink firmly at the bottom, writes Nipal Dihwali, an Indian chap. He's the only one who could write such a headline and not be instantly sentenced with a hate crime. And so I can't read it. I'm not going to, and I disavow. However, we probably will be doing a premium podcast or hangout at some point on this subject. Yeah. So
if you want a preview, you can probably find the link down in the description.
Yeah, but that's the argument. There's the future. Apparently, we are all going to be Asian. Not Chinese, but instead Pakistani. Let's go to the video comments.
Why are old movies so much better than the new ones? I think one of the reasons is that they actually bother to tell a believable story and do some developments in the characters.
I agree. As Carl and I covered in last week in the Glee is what unleashed wokeness onto society segment, there's a definite concentrated effort to turn all characters into pure idealized representations of whatever audience that you're hoping to get, rather than telling the stories of flawed characters who develop, or even flawed characters who get worse in the case of like anti-hero stories and such like that. And yeah, back in the day when people weren't so pinpoint focused on just presenting a political or societal message in their story, they actually paid a lot more attention to the actual creative and interesting elements of storytelling.
I don't really have much of an opinion. I don't watch enough movies.
That's fair. I'm a big nerd, and I did a media course, so
I appreciate it.
So there you go. I could speak for hours on it, but I won't.
Did you go to the cinema at all?
I went to the cinema the other week to see Spider-Man No Way Home, which I shockingly really loved, primarily because there was no politics in it other than having J.K. Simmons, J. Jonah Jameson be basically Alex Jones. But I don't think they actually conveyed the message that they were intending to by making him Alex Jones, because within the context of the story, everything he's saying is correct on the basis of the information that he has available to him. Everything he gets wrong is stuff that nobody knows other than Spider-Man and two or three of his friends. So on that basis, he's an excellent journalist just trying to tell the truth to people.
That's
so
awesome.
So Spider-Man No Way Home endorses Alex Jones.
Coincidentally, I've just about finished the Active Measures book, and I got to a section on the DNC hacks by the Russians and all the stuff they got. And they approached like CNN, Sky News, all these different outlets, and they all just took the information and ran with it. And then they messaged InfoWars, and one of the InfoWars guys answered the message and was like, I don't want to be a Russian pawn of disinformation. Go to hell.
Yeah, we can see through this. What do you think we are? A bunch of wild conspiracy theorists like CNN?
No, but it's that they could see that it was a disinformation campaign.
Well, yeah.
So InfoWars had more journalistic credibility than any of the corporate outlets.
Well, that does not shock me in the slightest. Yeah. But anyone who's maybe been putting off going to see Spider-Man No Way Home, I'd actually recommend it. It doesn't do a Last Jedi and destroy the old characters that it brings back. It treats them with respect and reverence, which I appreciated.
Let's go to the next video.
I don't think equity, diversity, and inclusion are fundamental values. They can be valuable in the measure that they participate in things that are, in fact, fundamental. I'm going to give you two. Justice and love.
While we may think we know what justice is, Bishop Barron has a springing definition for love, which is to will the good of the other. This can often mean saying no. DIE advocates might think this cruel, but as Shakespeare had Hamlet say, I must be cruel only to be kind.
Agree. So by that guy's definition, am I supposed to, if I ever find myself single again looking for a new partner, do I need to check off a diversity quota?
I need John going, yes.
I need to check out a specific number of Asian and black women before I can just go with whoever I fancy.
Yeah, that part's not important.
No, that's not important. Sorry, you can't love people. You need to appreciate them for their skin color only. Great.
Get the next video.
What's wrong with America? We still have the British trying to control our most essential activities. Vote for Mark. He's a Jew, and he absolutely ain't British.
Nah, see, if the British were in charge of everything in America, you'd be doing better.
For people who don't know as well, the point that he's referencing about the Jew aspect, we found a clip of, Blackburn in 1997, in which one of the candidates, as part of her campaigning, drove around in the car shouting at the Muslims in Blackburn, don't vote for Jack Straw, he's a Jew. And then she ended up getting 25% of the vote.
I was going to say, I bet it was effective.
She got what she got. And
what was the percentage of Muslim voters?
35. She got 25.
Oh, okay. So all the Muslims who decided to show up and vote then?
I don't know the breakdown, but it's...
Probably.
That's the local politics. That's what it was. Yeah. And what was weird is that's just accepted as well. That's... One of the lines she said was that, what was it, the Jews are the natural enemies of Muslims? Her words.
They're not quiet about it if you ask them about it, though, are they?
But she could shout that in a community, get so many votes, and also no one raise an eyebrow.
Yeah.
So bad it is. Culture. Let's go to the next one.
Hey, yo, Lotus Eaters, long-time listener, first-time gold member. I remember asking during the YouTube days in Super Chat whether or not I could put the Lotus Eaters logo on my race car. You can see in the photo that I have done so. And here's a few clips from my season so far.
Go the Sparko Packs! Oh, got a little... off-road.
Nice. That looks so fun.
Yeah.
No, you go on.
I remember watching Top Gear back in the day, and the episodes where they do that thing where they'd like buy a car for a couple hundred quid and then smash it up on a track.
Oh, yeah.
Driving around. I've always wanted to do that.
Same.
What were you going to say? Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say NASCAR looks really fun. And there's been loads of people over the years.
That NASCAR?
Yeah, they were going in the...
They were turning left.
Yeah, they were turning left, so it's NASCAR. No, I've heard loads of people say, oh, NASCAR's so boring because all they do is turn left and go in a circle. It's like, yeah, but there's lots of interesting action that goes on in that circle, though. Come on.
Also, my monkey brain is like, ooh, loud noise.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's go to the next one.
While that might terrify some people, like, oh, God, no, a weeb as a pope.
It just occurred to me that a weeb pope would have the power of God and anime on his side.
My God, they've got us.
Okay, yeah. I like the meme. Let's go to the next one.
Work. It does, but only works with kingly, priestly, and servile classes underpinned by slaves.
I would push back on the idea that socialism simply requires slaves. Nimitz proposes the idea that humans are naturally socialist, because that is the structure of hunter-gatherer societies. The central requirement for socialism to function is a central authority that can process all of the economic data of the society. Ancient state socialism was just barely able to do this through its expansive bureaucracies and extensive record-keeping. But economies eventually grew too complex for socialism to work, as described by economist F.A. Hayek.
I agree. Mm. I've also listened to Socialism, the Failed Idea That Never Dies, and Hayek also, like he just says, talks about it, the idea that it's more of a theory, but the idea that evolutionarily, because we were in hunter-gatherer societies, it was more of a collective sort of socialist thing where, you know, there wasn't defined trade with exchange economy or anything like that, so it's trading, and one had to do something for the other before they got anything. But then Nimitz points out, you know, that doesn't work past a certain size of a community. Like, it's the whole idea of the public healthcare system in the UK, the NHS. What is your share of control of 1 in 66 million?
It's zero.
Zero. That's why it's always overtaken by the government, who then will just exercise whatever will they want onto it and take more and more money to further their own more and more stupid and unattainable goals.
I get the argument, but I think these are answering two different questions.
Mm.
So the chap you just spoke, it looks more like you're assessing socialism as an idea, whereas I believe it was Alex, is more assessing socialism in practice.
Like, yes.
If you look at any socialist country, North Korea is a great example, in which people always say it's a failed state. I mean, sure, by Western standards, but by socialist standards,
they're doing great.
Rock solid. 70 years, still going.
Yeah.
It's a 70-year country, huh? And slave class. It's a real thing. Most socialist countries have done them or still have them, and it's necessary.
No, I would recommend Socialism, the Failed Idea That Never Dies to anybody. If you've not read it, it's a good read.
Yeah, so I don't necessarily think you're wrong. It's just two different
problems. I understand what you're saying.
I don't let a little snow get in the way of working on my stuff. Sure, it can be uncomfortable if you're not prepared. But if you prepare properly, you can still accomplish your goals despite a variety of conditions.
I didn't pick up on what that was for a second.
Sometimes all the preparation in the world can't help you. But that doesn't mean you can't try anyway.
Nice.
Should the FBI be looking into you?
Why
are you building a mecha suit in your
backyard? Yeah, I was gonna say, have we actually got viewers building themselves real Gundams?
Apparently, yes.
Pretty based, I'm going to say.
Yeah. Also, I like your accent. Let's go to the next one.
Andy and Little Joan with another Legend of the Pines, the Cookie Jar House of Gloucester Township, New Jersey. This house was originally built in the late 40s to withstand atomic blast. They call it the Cookie Jar House because it's just shaped that way. They were originally going to build a whole neighborhood of these houses, but they only built the one. And it's kind of an oddity over in Glendora, New Jersey, not far from my house. I really wish I lived in a giant cookie jar that could withstand an atomic blast.
Yeah, so do I. Yeah, that's really cool, actually. There's a nice little historical tidbit right there.
Also, why is Joan's head upside down? Is that how she sleeps?
Don't question it.
It is the head upside down, right? It's not just me.
Ours is not to question why, Callum. Yeah.
It's always been one of the, like, a childish dream of mine. Like, I've always wanted, like, a full nuclear bunker to live in.
Oh, yeah, it'd be really cool, wouldn't it?
Ever since I played Fallout, I was like, you know what, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Let's go to the next one.
Callum Preppers.
Howdy, Lotus Eaters. Figure I'd share a little bit of dad advice myself, personally. I find it's always good to read your kids' books. Read them a variety of books. I have read occasionally some verses from some religious books. I have me Lord of the Rings, because I'm a Lord of the Rings fan. I do read some Eastern stuff, so I got this here. H.P. Lovecraft, because my son actually enjoys scary stories sometimes. And then this barbecue book, because I cook a ton. And sometimes I have the kids cook with me, so I figured they might as well learn some recipes while they're at it.
All right, cool.
It's pretty great.
I never read any Lovecraft.
Have you not?
No.
I'll have to lend you some. It's very good.
Okay.
Well, actually, you might struggle with it because it's got a lot of old school vernacular in it. So it's like terms like sanguine show up a lot, which I think means red. I just sort of go by context when I'm reading it. It's like, oh, sounds spooky.
Spooky word. I don't know what it means.
Yeah.
Also,
John's got Necronomicon, he says.
I can see the Book of Five Rings. If you've read that, let me know how it is. Because I play a lot of Shogun 2, and there's always like the little quotes. And I read some of the Art of War, and the other one's name now escapes me.
But the Way of the Samurai, I think he had.
Yeah, I always found them kind of annoying, though. Because it's not their fault. Like, it's the first text on war, right?
Oh, is this your same complaint that you had with On Liberty, where you're just like, well, duh?
Yeah, well, to be honest, some of them in the Art of War is like that, where he's like, you should attack the enemy when they're weak. No S! Like,
well, yeah, but
it's not his fault, I get it, but it is kind of annoying
that,
to
there were people going, wow, I never thought of that before.
I was going to attack it when he was strong! Oh, yeah. Cancel the plans!
boys, hold up!
Yeah, there is a lot of good stuff in there, but occasionally it's just like, like, really? Anyway, it's my bigotry of being in the modern age. Let's go to the next one.
On the beef between Trump and DeSantis, I think they're trying to manufacture this so the idea that Trump and DeSantis cannot be a force against them, because I could easily see Trump running for president and DeSantis as a vice president and completely demolishing them. So they're terrified, and that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to draw battle lines and trying to divide their opponents before they even get together.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah.
If I was American, that's a ticket I would absolutely vote for.
There is someone who messaged me yesterday on Twitter who circles in these circles. I won't name him because I don't know if this will embarrass him or not. But he saw the segment and he says there might actually be a little bit of a conflict going on there. But it's just egos, which I can believe.
I can believe on Trump's side. DeSantis, as far as I've seen him in terms of his public persona, doesn't really seem to have that much of a, you know, huge ego or anything.
Yeah, he didn't speak to any of that, but just apparently Trump's ego is Trump's ego. So it may be that he has a little bit of a bugbear, but it doesn't seem to make any sense, I don't imagine it turning into much, because in my head, you're Donald Trump, the polling in your party is so unbelievably in favor of you, why would you get upset about DeSantis having some polling?
Yeah,
it makes him look, you know, 11% or whatever it was. It seems like a very, very minor thing to be upset about, if it is true. But
That's if it is true.
Yeah, but I trust the guy who told me, but it's such a disappointing thing if it does turn out to be the case that he's up at night being upset about that. But again, when it comes down to it, when real politics sets in, well, it looks like Donald Trump will presumably just win the primaries, and then,
yeah,
going from there.
Yeah, I mean, once again, if he can get DeSantis as vice, as his VP.
Yeah, well, Mike Pence ain't going to do it, is
done. He? Yeah, no, absolutely not.
Go to the next one. Oh, we're done the next one.
So yes.
Let's go to the written comments on the site. So, Doctors versus Rogan. Speak One Mind says, what's happening with Joe Rogan and Dr. Malone reminds me of what happened to Galileo. The authority creates a message, someone questions it, or provides evidence that the message isn't fully true, and then they get silenced slash their life destroyed by those propping up the message. You can see the message slightly crumbling down as well. Like, yesterday we spoke about those Vox articles.
Like, yes.
By the way, the masks don't work. By the way, the vaccines don't work.
They're starting to admit to a lot of different things that a lot of people were saying like a year and a half ago. Yeah.
It's not that they don't have a role, but your argument that we were going to control the virus with these it didn't work, and you have to accept that now. So these narratives do seem to be crumbling, which is nice.
Yeah, but it upsets me that the people who were pushing these narratives in the first place are just trying to reposition themselves now so they can get ahead of it.
Sure.
Yeah, that's annoying.
Called out. Chris Holmes says, all physicians are doctors, not all doctors are physicians. Alfred the Beta says, trust the science, but don't trust Nobel Prize winning biochemist Dr. Carey Mullis, who invented PCR tests, or Dr. Malone, who co-invented the mRNA technology, or Dr. Michael Yeardon, the former vice president of Pfizer's Allergy and Respiratory Research Unit. Trusted government appointees, apparatchiks, who know which side their bread is buttered.
Yep.
It does more and more look like that. Omar Awad says, people treat the silly cloth masks like effing magic talismans. If you're that much of a hypochondriac, you should just wear a full hazmat suit. I would at least respect that you're taking this seriously. To wear just the cloth mask is either hollow virtue signaling or literal insanity.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, unfortunately, I think actually a lot of it is literal insanity.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. I took a read through a bit of A State of Fear yesterday while I was writing a script just to get a reference for something, and she was talking about how David Halpern had said to people that, you know, it took a long time for us to get people on board with wearing masks, and they're really effective because of the signal they send. And then he mentions, oh yeah, they're also effective, but he really front-loaded the fact that they're sending a signal. And that's what people are doing. It's like, I'm wearing a mask, you're wearing a mask, we're friends. I'm wearing a mask, you're not wearing a mask, you're the enemy. That's what it's all really about.
Maybe for quite a lot of people, but I think there is also a large section of the public who just don't think about that topic. And therefore, they just think, well, the mask, they've been told it helps, so... But
with that comes the inevitable of them sort of like looking suspiciously at those who aren't wearing masks. I mean, it seems to have died down a little bit more recently, but...
I think a lot of it's literal insanity, or I should say ignorance, frankly, which isn't anyone's fault. I mean, they've been lied to. Adrian of The Fountain says, Joe Rogan's interviews are always on point because he is willing to let his guests speak, and that is usually a good thing. That is a good thing. Student of history. Yes, doctors. Their illustrious ranks include a dentist, a medical student, a great doctor of farming the good smoke. All jokes aside, did they think no one would check the background on this? Apparently, yes. Based Ape says, I can't believe Pfizer is only paying 270 doctors. Yeah. George Windsor, read the car with the masks on the vents. Just further proof that I was right when I started saying people were fetishizing the mask.
Yeah. Aren't they trying to say that you should wear masks during sex now as well?
I mean, we've all seen it. I mean, we're not going to rehash it because we've all lived through those last 2 years.
Yeah.
But did you see the clip of when the nightclubs opened for vaccinated people only? And there were like two people with masks on. They were like shoving their masks into each other.
You know, you need to send those to me.
God. I think they're insane. I think a lot of people are insane.
I agree.
Let's move on. So it goes to the G4 stuff.
So G4, Omar Awad says, all show hosts exist to look easy on the eyes. The whole idea is to be a presentable presenter. Even if it's not about being sexually attractive, you're supposed to have a likable personality. And that applies to us too, so thank you very much. This is the problem with leftists. They spit hate, but in the next breath demand your undying love, devotion, and attention as if they're entitled to it just by existing. That's correct. That's why you get AOC. You hate me because you want to have sex with me. And this woman, you hate me because you don't want to have sex with me.
Pick a lane.
Yeah, exactly. Just pick one, for God's sake.
I will mention from Pete as well. On behalf of the entire chat, we demand proof of the well-being of Joan of Bark. She hasn't moved or barked in over a week.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
Mysteries of the Pines, where's Joan? That's the mural mystery.
Yeah.
Let's go to Christopher.
Christopher Fisher, the problem with sexism in gaming is that they are games, and no matter how much money is involved or how many people make a career out of them, games are mainly played by young people, mostly males, and they are assholes. That is just an unavoidable point of life. Boys need a place to be assholes, or they break things in public. If women want to create a space for their softer side of humanity, then do that, but do not try to steal the existing places and soften them, and expect everyone to be okay with the stuff that spills out into the larger world as a result. TLDR, build your own and say no boys are assholes allowed. I think you're kind of underselling young men and saying that they're mostly assholes, but...
we are speaking about a very specific thing, which is, like, Xbox Call of Duty Modern Warfare chat rooms.
Yeah, actually, no, to be fair, there's a long lineage of assholes related to those communities.
I mean, I always loved Donkey's videos where it was just him, like, talking smack with people in the voice chat, and then that's the video. That's all the video is.
In fact, I never got into Donkey.
Okay.
I find his voice just, like, rapes my ears.
Fair enough.
To be perfectly honest.
Not for everyone.
Yeah, not for everyone. Lord Nerevar says, V had the best take on G4. Imagine you give up your time or even your money for content produced by people who hate you and want to push you out of your hobby. How dare they rely on your custom and then call you a bad person? G4 delenda est. I mean, sadly, that seems to have been the primary mode of operation for the gaming industry for the past 8 years, ever since Gamergate happened, to be perfectly honest. It just made it more obvious that that's what was going on. Sarah Foster says, I'm a woman and a gamer. I've found that most men I come across when doing raids, etc., are absolutely lovely and very respectful. They're often surprised that I'm a woman, but they settle very quickly. Love my gaming pals, both male and female. That's pretty wholesome. George Happ, anybody who witnessed Gamergate shouldn't be at all surprised at the G4 debacle, especially with pro-doxing Sessler on the team. Is that Adam Sessler, I think his name is? I've heard that there was something else going on with him, but didn't have time to look into it. Feminism corrupts everything it touches, and the Frosk woman is a representation of that. Even Olivia Munn sang the feminist song once she got older and hit the wall. I wish men weren't such simps to want women in everything, regardless of the cost. Well, the thing is, I don't think they want these kinds of women who are going to give them lectures involved in it. They just want normal people. Olivia Munn seemed like a relatively normal person 15 years ago. If she's not anymore, that's sad. But This is how it goes. Justin B, I only ever heard of G4 when Gerard, the bearded guy on the left, aka the completionist on YouTube, said in his videos how excited he was because it was a lifelong dream to present on G4. He looked so uncomfortable on there that I bet he's regretting joining them now. Well, seeing as he apparently left Razor Fist and others in the lurch, he's made his bed, he can lie in it. Do you want to move on to the next one?
Sure. So on the future being Asian, Alcibiades Nuts says the couple dozen people displaced due to actual changes in their local climate are most likely going to go as short a distance as possible, not 4,000 miles away to a completely different climate from what they used to. Yeah, so with a different culture and a different language. You know what's easier? Moving down the road or learning a new language?
Yeah, just go next door.
Robert Longshore says no one. Nothing. Leftist. Whites cannot clean toilets. This is the only work a brown slave class. We must import browns to be our wage slaves. I mean, to be low-earn wages.
Yeah.
Student of history, we must slash wages quick, import a massive surf class. I hate it. I hate it so much.
That's what I said. It's like, I'm not a Marxist. In fact, I hate most Marxist economics. It's nonsense. Except, all of a sudden, when you look at that, it's like, okay, maybe there is a little bit of exploitation going on there in the classical definition of it.
It's not just the foreigners. It's the locals who are being exploited. Because you're literally turning up and being like, hello, you're having a nice time. Oh, you've all got well-paying jobs. Oh, yes, it's very lovely in South Korea. By the way, all your wages are going to be halved because I'm importing millions of people.
Great. Thanks.
Just a bastard.
Cheers. And no wonder Dole looks so enticing to so many people. It's like, well, if you're just going to do this to me anyway, I'll just get paid for nothing.
Well, it's just not a complaint. Like, people list it as something to be worried about. Didn't you know the high wages that makes the workforce uncompetitive? It's not bad. I don't know, what is that bad for? It's not the people getting
that's
paid.
That's the economy working.
Anyway, I mean, I'm not an economics person, but I find that complaint really, really strange. So Edward Woodstock says, Asian author says the future is Asian. Big shock. This does sound like me going over to the Orient and saying the future of Japan is British. Sounds dashed imperialist for apparent leftists. Yes, it certainly does.
Yeah, I think that's all we've got time for, unless you want to go over one more.
I wanted to see what people were saying about the Asian section because there wasn't much we could say, so I thought I was going to read some of them.
Okay.
Dr. Genghis Khan. No, we're not invading. This is an enrichment. if you want more from us, go over to lowseas.com. Please do subscribe. You get access to all the premium content, such as the live stream we did the other day just for premium members, and I'm sure we'll be doing one on Dr. Khan and the Russia Today outlet as well. So,
spicy.
Thank you and goodbye.